Mickey, thanks so much for coming back on. Greatly appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
Going more into the book, can you talk about, for people that are listening, like I said, there's the pimp, the Mac, and then the hoe, and there's also a couple other people involved in that. So with those people, can you be like, say I'm not, say I, you know, I'm don't have any confidence, I'm very low. Can I be taught to become a pimp or a Mac, or I'm just basically the hoe if I'm already in those kind of standards where I have no confidence? I'm looking for the mommy figure, which we talked about in the last interview.
No, you can be taught anything. It's almost the same techniques that you use to train animals. Anybody with a brain and a central nervous system can see. That's what's so good about being a human being. You know, that those characters or those are characteristics. You look at them like that. So what's so good about being a human being is, I mean, if you're born a lion, you're just a lion. I can teach a lion how to swim, but not quite like a dolphin. He's stuck with those claws. He's stuck with that tail. He's stuck with a need to eat 600 pounds of meat a day. He's stuck with that. But as a human being, you can literally transform who you are just with a mindset. Animals don't have that choice. You know, I can teach a gazelle all day how to hunt like a lion. At the end of the day, he's gonna get eaten by one. He just can't transform like that. But you can turn what I used to say from wimp to pimp almost overnight. I mean, I've known several professional boxers who would tell you they were bullied as children. But then they went and got training, and then they went and got confidence, and then they went and practiced this, that, and the other. And next thing you know, they were heavyweight champion of the world. So you can change a human being just by his mindset. And that's what puts us above certain other types of animals. So yes, you can, it's easy to do. You know, it's easy to do. Most guys who come to me for help, because I have on my website about the one-on-one counseling type things, they don't want to know how to do what I did. They want to know how to use what I know in their everyday life so they can get certain results from women, so they can get results on the job. They don't want to change. They just want to change their position on the chessboard. Yes, that can be done, and it's not that difficult to do.
Mickey, my thing is, you know, you talked about the one-on-one counseling. Do you feel like, and we hear about this all the time, you can go on YouTube and these guys are, you know, approaching women off the street, you know, and doing all kinds of other things. Do you feel like this is such a lucrative in industry now for guys that have had success with women that know, you know, that were pimps such as yourself, that know that game? Because it seems like nowadays men really lack confidence. Men have serious anxiety approaching women. Is that something that's just happened, you know, within the, you know, 2000s, or is this something that's really been going on for years upon years on end?
Well, I noticed just in my lifetime, it's a word, I don't even know if it's a real word. It's a word that I use called gynophobia. And I say a lot of men suffer from gynophobia. You know, I noticed it with a friend of mine when we were talking at the gym in the steam room. And we were just talking. And then when a woman walked in, beautiful woman, all of a sudden he started to stutter when he talked. And he couldn't remember certain things. And I'm like, how could her presence affect your speech? And you've been speaking since you were 2 years old. You know, so I started to pick up certain little things and stuff like that. And I noticed when men were in certain situations, how they weren't scared. And I started developing certain techniques from there where I could help other people and other guys. But usually the guy strikes out before he even picks up the bat. I could just see him. I'll just be looking at him at the bar and go, and 3, 2, 1, and she's gone. He had her. He had her. And one of my friends, he said, what did I say wrong? I said, when you were walking over there and you looked down at your shoes and looked back up and straightened your tie to show how unsure about yourself you were, you lost her then. Before you opened your mouth, you lost her then. Because I saw her. She went from a smile to a straight face to a head turn. Now, it wasn't your looks because she saw you walking over and she was smiling. So obviously, she was okay with the way you looked. But before you got a chance to even open your mouth, your body language told her that she's too good for you. And when your body language tells a woman that she's too good for you, she believes you. And that was it.
Mickey, do you feel like this has really gotten worse with Facebook and now Instagram, where these women put out these beautiful pictures? And some of these women use a lot of different, and the men too, of course. I'm not going to just say it's a woman. They use different kind of lighting to make sure that they, you know, the abs, the lighting's on the abs, or they look good with a fat ass or whatever it may be. With that said, do you feel like that's really changed now with that social media lifestyle that, you know, men act like women are gods now? Like, it's like, this woman is a goddess. I can't talk to this woman. I don't even know how to approach her. Like you said, with the guy in the sauna, he started getting tongue-tied because he was just sitting there and he didn't know what the hell to do.
I think the internet has done wonders for women, and the internet stuff has done, it's been a big detriment to men. And I'll tell you why, because it's something you touched on. I'm glad you brought that up too. Nobody brings that up. You're the first person to ever bring that up. So I've been wanting to address it, but I have to address things as people bring them to me. What you said, I'm gonna take your words. She has these perfect pictures, you know, and she has these perfect words that she studied the nights before she posted them. And she gets to be revered as a god, a goddess, god, whatever, how you used to revere girls in the magazine when you were young, the Sports Illustrated and all of that stuff. And you build up in your mind already that she's on this pedestal. Now, what that does is that gives her the power to swing in her pendulum. But let's say you're somebody too, and your power does not so much revolve around how you look. And you only get good at things that you practice repeatedly, and you get comfortable with those. See, it's not that practice makes perfect. Practice reduces anxiety. And once anxiety is gone, then performance becomes perfect. So you don't have a lot of experience in walking up to talking to women anymore. All you do is just copy and paste the same lines all day. You don't have that interaction experience, and that's what a man needs. That's what builds his confidence up. You know, if you're a boxer, well, you know that your right hook can knock out the average guy because you've knocked out hundreds of them. So you're not scared when you're walking into a fight. And if you're a guy who's used to talking to girls, walking up to them, you know that what you're about to say out of your mouth is going to get her in that car and back to your house because you do this all day long. But what if you don't do it all day long? What if you just sit at the computer all day long? So your confidence has been lowered, but at the same time, hers has been raised. So it really puts, the social media really puts people at a disadvantage. If I were using social media to date in this day and time, I would just use it to arrange a meeting. You know, she can drive her car to meet me at some coffee shop. I'll drive my car, you know, for her safety and stuff like that. And that way she's not stranded. We sit there. See, now it goes on my court now. Now I get to walk up and talk, and you don't have 400 likes while you're sitting there at Starbucks. You got about two guys looking at you. That's it. I got two girls looking at me. So now we've evened the playing field a little bit more, and I can speak from more of a position of power. But I would never try to talk to a girl on the internet, because every girl on the internet, you know, I'm aging myself now. Every girl on the internet is Farrah Fawcett. I'm telling on myself how old I am. Every woman on the Instagram is Farrah Fawcett, you know, but at the coffee shop, she's just Jane and I'm Bill. and we're just talking. And now we're kind of even a little bit, you know, she's looking at my jokes or looking at my face as opposed to 400 likes. I'm just a guy flipping through pages on the internet. So yeah, it has messed it up a lot for the men, but it has enhanced it for the women.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think that a lot's changed too with, you know, we got Tinder and Bumble and these dating apps now, and they've really changed how men approach women too, because, you know, you don't see a lot of guys meeting women in grocery stores or, you know, at their job now. They're just flicking back and forth, like and dislike. And that's obviously hurting, you know, the social interaction between men and women because, you know, you're not, like you said, a lot of these guys aren't approaching the woman on the street. They're approaching the woman through swiping left and right. So I think that's also another thing for that woman have the advantage at too, because you can put a picture of any person up there. You can play with the lighting. You can play with the, you know, enlarge the girl's breasts or, you know, do something with her ass or whatever it may be. And they have that advantage where a man doesn't really have that, you know, you're not going to put big breasts or a big ass on a guy and a girl starts swiping right and stuff. So, You know, I'm sure you feel the same way that those apps have really helped women too.
Yeah, they have. They've made every woman a superstar, and they've made every man a fan. And it's so lopsided now, it's almost an uphill battle for men. You know, so you have, there's a way you can navigate through that too. You know, I teach guys how to navigate through that. You know, you don't swim with the crowd, you have to swim diagonally. I do the same on the dance floor. I'm gonna have every woman look at me. Why? Because everybody's dancing at 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock. I'm gonna walk through the crowd from 5 o'clock to 10 o'clock, going this way. I said, watch the heads turn. They have to, because I'm cutting across their eyes. You know, you have to do certain things. It reminds me, same guy, you know, because I try to help him. We're at the bar, and he said, I said, I'm gonna get that chick right there. And I went to go, like, walk past her, and I saw that she looked at me and smiled. But her friend, the alpha female, didn't really like me. So then when she picked up on that energy, she didn't like me either. So I just went on about my business. And I went back and I kept sending her drinks. And where we were sitting, and he said, if she's not coming over here to talk to you, why are you sending her drinks? I said, she's not gonna talk to me. I can't talk to her in front of the alpha female, because the alpha female is not as attractive, and it's gonna take away from her, and I see that she controls the other one. And he said, why are you sending her drinks? I said, stay tight, you'll see. I said, I didn't send her drinks to come say hi to me. I sent her drinks because now she has to go to the restroom. So when she separates from the other girl, I said, watch this. So when she comes out, I'm standing between her, her friends, DeMar. Her friends can't see her. All I need is 20 seconds to talk. She walked over to her friends. She quietly grabbed her purse and she left with me. And I said, I'll see you tomorrow, man. And I just walked off, because I have to separate her from the group, because I see that her opinion is controlled by the unattractive alpha female. So I said, no, I got to get them apart. And if I pull her to go dance, the other woman may stop that. So I have to, so I said, no, you'll see in a second. So there are techniques and things that you can do, little things like that. Now, you don't be standing there right when she comes out the exit, but now she has to walk past me. This is when I step up. Oh, you're the one sending me them drinks. Yes, that's me. It's hot in here. Would you like to go? I've eaten here before. The food is horrendous. You know, would you like to go just down the street to get such and such, so and so? You know, and next thing you know, she's grabbing her purse and she left.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you what, it reminds me of when you hear this in movies, is like every hot girl's got the fat friend.
Yes.
And that's what it reminds me of, what you're saying with the alpha female and the, you know, the hot friend. And the alpha female's not as good looking. So it just reminds me of that scenario.
And the fat friend always has the car keys. See, that's what you got to watch out for too, because if she's not getting any action, she's going to say, it's time to go. So sometimes I would have my friend with me, I'm like, you're going to have to talk to her. Why? So I can talk to her. Because if I talk to her and no one talks to the friend's going to grab the keys and they all have to leave. Right. So you have to occupy her while I get the rest of them. Because someone has to talk to the woman with the car keys, or else she's going to leave. And she's gonna take her friends with her.
That's true. That's 100% true. And I agree with that. I want to talk about this and then we're gonna move on. But, you know, it reminds me too, when you said, we were talking about all these girls think they're goddesses now, and, you know, half of them are not. But regardless of that, you know, we talked about this in the last interview about OnlyFans and like how a lot of these porn stars, because, you know, we have Pornhub and all these other websites where they can't make money off that now, because no one's buying the videos. So a lot of them go to the OnlyFans and they do all these other things. A lot of these girls that are young, that are in their 20s, are going to OnlyFans. They might not be in porn, they're just going to OnlyFans. And I want to ask you what you think about this, because I was talking to a friend and he said, you know, this sounds 100% true, that a lot of these girls, I'm not talking about the girls in porn, I'm talking about the regular Susie down the street that looks good and she's just doing it, try to make a couple of bucks while she's in school. A lot of these girls are going on OnlyFans now and they're making that money, And a lot of these guys, like you said, they don't know how to, you know, act social. They're on these Tinder and Bumble. They don't know how to approach a woman in daylight. So with that said, they go to OnlyFans. They're giving this girl a couple of bucks. She might talk to them, or they see her naked, which they could go on any porn site and see any woman naked for that matter. But regardless of that, they're losing their self-confidence and they're losing their self-esteem because they're paying this girl that they're never going to meet, that they're never going to have sex with, and they're paying her. What do you believe about that? Do you agree with that, that these guys' self-confidence are really going down now because of, you know, we go back to Tinder and Bumble, but OnlyFans even too?
That's exactly what's happening. It seems like, well, it doesn't seem like, logic dictates it, so it doesn't seem, it is what it is. I tell people, I said, Hugh Hefner made more money selling pictures of nude women than I ever made selling nude women. And that's just the truth. So it's like, when it comes to the OnlyFans and things like that, it's really killing the guy inside. It's like the same guy, he's my best friend, I just be trying to help him, he suffers from severe gynophobia stuff, he's gotten so much better, you know, but he's been dealing with nothing but prostitutes for the past like 20-25 years. I know, because I used to send them to him sometimes. But I said, you know, when we were in high school, you knew how to talk to girls, you would mack them up, you had grown women when we were 16-17. What happened? And he would say, and this also made him a lousy, as he says, lousy in the sack, because he's like, I give a woman a grace 3 minutes, she'll ever ask for it. But he said, when you start messing with prostitutes, they have to like you because you're paying them, and you don't care about doing a good job, and you don't have to talk to them. He said, after 20 years of dealing with them, he said, man, I'm just gotten lazy. I don't know what to say to women anymore. I said, but you used to. So it's like a muscle. If you don't exercise a muscle, it gets flabby, it gets this, it gets old. And that's what's happening to a lot of guys with the OnlyFans and stuff. They're not practicing that muscle. That muscle you start working out in the sixth grade when all the pretty girls are on one side of the room and all the guys are on the other side of the room. We're all standing there with flowers, scared to death. But eventually you take that step and you walk all the way across there and ask that girl to dance. She may say yes, she may reject you. You know, my favorite meeting spot was the punch bowl, you know, because I wasn't much of a dancer, but I could talk. So I would catch them when they tired from dancing. And would you like me to get that punch for you? And then I start talking in there, of course, leave with me. But I didn't try to ask them to dance because I had two left feet. I said, no, I'll wait by the punch bowl. Eventually it's halftime and they're going to come over here. Ain't much change. But what you would call it, the restroom and the punch bowl. That was my spot, so like in the sixth grade. But by the time you get to the eighth or ninth grade, you're not afraid anymore. You know she's not going to rip your head off like a praying mantis. She's not going to explode. You're not going to die from a no, because you've been practicing this. The little Valentine boxes, they don't do that anymore, you know. And it, the less you work something out like that muscle, it develops this fear. It develops this anxiety. You make her larger than life, and some guys now feel rejection is the worst thing they can hear. No, an audit from the IRS is the worst thing you can hear. Rejection is nothing.
Do you, Mickey, blame this on like culture? You know, we talked about the social media, but I blame it on culture too. We see the rise of feminism, women's rights, and I'm all for women's having rights. You know, I agree with that 100%. But it's almost like a lot of these women, you know, we see the Me Too movement has, you know, went on a rise too. Not saying some of those guys are great men, but you know, it makes it that if you're a good guy, you're almost afraid to approach too, because you're worried about, if I touch the woman the wrong way, what would she do? Could she say I'm like a rapist or something like that? If I say the wrong thing, it might be, you know, called a sexist joke. So a lot of these guys, and I, you know, I've been prone to this too, but along with my friends, is we're thinking too much in our head when we're approaching, because you're worried about, you know, all these things, you know, because again, it goes to the goddess mentality. It goes to the Me Too. You got to say the right things. You got to watch what you say nowadays. You know, you can't say stuff now to a woman that you could have said in the 60s or the 50s or the 70s. It's like out of touch now.
Well, it's like in boxing. When I know you've heard this before, every boxer says it. They said you can train, you can spar, and you can have a plan. As soon as the bell rings, you get hit one time, that plan goes out the window. Why? Because the boxer in front of you is not going to do the exact same thing that your sparring partner has been doing. He's not going to move the same way. He's not going to throw it the same way. You can get sparring partners that mimic that. He's not going to move in the exact same way that you've been training. In boxing, you only have, like in karate, you have 12 basic movements, 4 kicks, 4 blocks, 4 punches. You learn that the first day. Everything else is just repetition and learning how to put those combinations together. Well, the same thing is when you're talking to a woman. I don't care if it's a Me Too, alpha female, beta. I've macked up quite a few lesbians and changed their minds. I said, you do it by adjusting your mac. See, if you're a fighter who fights inside close, that's all you do. But you fighting a fighter now who just comes forward. Well, you can't fight him like that. You lean forward against Mike Tyson and fight inside, he's gonna knock you out because he's faster, and that's what he does. So now you have to back up. You have to put the distance between you. That might not have been the same way you fought George Foreman. So you fight each fighter differently depending on their particular style. So what you can't go to a woman with preconceived lines. I have no idea what I'm gonna say before I say something to a woman. I have to get her energy and her personality, but the right words come out because I stay in logic and I don't feel that anxiety. So it doesn't matter. She can be a woman who's masochistic and wants me to tie her up. She can be a Me Too and wants to throw tomatoes at me. Doesn't matter. I can adjust immediately to her personality. Like in Aikido, you use your opponent's strength and their forward movement against them. The stronger the other person is, the more deadly the lock is, because actually your strength is locking itself. So that's usually a style they teach women, bodyguards, people that are short, small, skinny, but because a wrist is a wrist. You know, you may not have enough strength to beat Mike Tyson, but if you get him in a wrist lock, he's gonna scream just like an 8-year-old child would scream. It's his joints. So it's an energy matching thing. So it's not like I have to talk to one particular type of woman, but you can mack them all up, but not the same way. You can beat Mike Tyson, you can beat Tommy Hearns. I'm aging myself again. I haven't watched boxing in 15 years. But you can't fight them both the same way because they don't fight the same way. The way you talk to one woman, you might have to do a lot of talking. I've macked up other chicks with like 6 words because they did all the talking. I just agreed. What was she talking about? I have the slightest idea, but I know every time I nodded my head and said, interesting, she smiled. I don't know what she was saying. I was daydreaming. But the next woman, she's quiet, so I pull it out of her. But you don't need to do that with the other woman that's talking. If you guys are just gonna be, oh, I'm sorry, what were you saying? Oh, no, I think you, I'm like, oh no, that's a communication clash right there. That's not what you do with this one. This one, you just nod your head and you butt in every once in a while, you know? You remember Austin Powers?
Right.
In the plane, when she, I've done this before, it's worked for me, but when she was talking about her credentials and how she went to Harvard, and he said, that sounds great. Would you rather shag now or shag later? I'm like, interesting, fascinating. You want to leave and go to my place or yours? I mean, but I had a different result than he did, but some, you don't have, it's, I tell guys a lot of times, it's what you don't say that gets you the girl, not what you do say. Be cool.
You know what I see though, Mickey, too? You know what I see too, Mickey, is that a lot of these guys, like the woman says, I like country music. And the guy says, yeah, I love it too. I like, you know, pizza. I love the pizza. I love pizza. So they're always agreeing with the woman too. So then after a while, and you know, I've been prone to this too. I've done this before, is that you keep agreeing with the woman. She gets bored. She says, well, this guy's boring as hell. You know, he agrees everything I say. I want somebody to say, hey, you know, I may love pizza, but I hate country music. Why would I want to listen to that? You know, but I see a lot of men doing stuff like that too. And like I said, I've done that before personally too.
So. You speed up, you change the pace.
Yeah.
In your agreement. Like she says, I like pizza. Do you like pizza? I don't eat carbs, baby, but I would pay $1,000 to watch you chew it. So I did I agree with her? No. But did I make her smile? Yes. So you can switch the rhythms. You don't you can go like this and you switch the rhythms, you know. Do you like country music? Not particularly, but I would love to watch you dance to it. Where's the jukebox? Come on, let's get some Carrie Underwood in here. Because I don't really dance. So when women say, would you like to dance with me? I said, no, but if you go put here some money, put it in the jukebox, play your favorite song, come back and dance for me. And I'll sit here and watch you all night long. Well, usually about 10 minutes later, we're in my car, we're gone.
Yeah, that's pretty smooth, man. That's pretty smooth.
Why would I get up there and let you see my two left feet? No, I'm going to keep them planted right here. I'm going to watch you. And I'm going to keep eye contact the whole time. And next thing you know, we're leaving, you know? Yeah. So you don't have to agree. What you don't do is bump heads. That's what you don't do. You take her momentum and you dance with it. You take her aggression and you dance with it. You don't meet it with a brick wall. You grab it gently by the hand and spin it. So that's what I would do in those situations.
Right,
because I've been in those situations and that's what I did.
One of my friends sent me this question about racism and porn, and I want you to address that because I actually watched a documentary on this that there's you know, white women that won't have sex with black men. Or if they do, they have to get paid more. You know, white women are getting paid more than black women. And you know, you can correct this if this is wrong. This is what I was told. This is what I've watched in a documentary. So my question is that. So can you talk about racism and porn? Are those issues that I just explained true?
Yes, and even more. I knew a woman. God, what was her name? Shannon something. I don't remember her. This is a long time ago. Shannon something. She was a short, thin, white chick with red hair. And she did an interracial scene with another girl. I want to pull it up, but I don't want to block your face. I have all this stuff in my hard drives. But I was going to put her in another scene. And she said, I don't do interracial porn. I said, but you just did a scene with Brandi Cox. And she said, oh, women don't count as interracial. And I said, oh, but then I looked on her mantle. And she had a black boyfriend who had to be about 6'4". And she was like, yeah, that's my hubby. And I said, so you don't have a problem with black men? She said, not at all, I'm about to marry one. She said, I don't do scenes with black men because my price goes down. See, once I do an interracial scene, when I go back to do all white scenes, the white companies won't pay me as much anymore. She said, it has nothing to do with personal business. She said, my hubby will say, why would you take $1,000 loss just to prove a point? No, keep doing how you're doing. But that's the business. You know, porn is overtly racist. It's, I wouldn't so much call it racism. I would call it, there's no PC at all. You know, there's no PC at all. Interracial scenes, be it white men with black women or black men with white women, they have to have some kind of rape theme. And whatchamacallit, and it's not personal because you have a white film director telling you to choke this white woman. Now, why do I have to be so rough with her? Only see, because you're a beast, right? And she's a damsel in distress. Now, if you choke her, we get like 8,000 more units sold. And you're like, choke her, okay, right here. Yeah, and slap her and call her names. I'm like, okay, I'm like, Cynthia, you don't mind. She'd be like, do what you gotta do. We gotta make this money and get out of here. I'm like, okay, we're gonna go to dinner later. Yeah, right, okay. Now I'm gonna choke him. And he's like, and cut, beautiful. They do the same thing with if you notice the interracial scenes, like I said, be it white men and black women, or black men and white women, how rough they are.
Yeah.
And the directors are told to do that on purpose.
No, I heard that. That's why I asked, because I wanted to, you know, see if that was true, because I saw that in documentaries. And also, my question is too, And I want to see if you, because you still, I'm sure, have connections with the industry. You know this. You know, we see a lot of, from what I, you know, watching these documentaries and stuff. And personally, I've heard from guys that I'm friends with, a lot of these guys are watching interracial stuff, and that interracial is like a huge, like, hotbed of money. Is that correct?
That was the biggest seller when I was in porn.
Wow.
Interracial. And you had separated companies. They were separated on race. You had companies that shot all black. You had companies that shot all white. And you had companies that shot interracial and didn't care. And interracial wasn't just black and white. Interracial was also Indian. It was also Asian. But you had companies that did not shoot anything but white. You had companies that did not shoot anything but black. And that was, a lot of that was the distributors also, and where their market was going to. You know, because if they have an all black market and their distributor is delivering to these kind of places, when they introduce, and when I say Indian, I mean East Indian, in there, now that he has to find a whole new distributor for that movie, because his distributor be like, I don't know where to take this. I can't sell these Bollywood videos. The interracial guy, he has that connection, you know? So it depends a lot on the distributor, and it gets a lot, it's a lot of politics in porn. Don't think that everyone in porn is a liberal. They're not. You have your starch conservatives, you have your liberals, you have your BLM element, you have your only lesbian films and only lesbian producer element, and we hate men element, certain films. I know a couple of companies, I don't want to call them out by name, but they only shoot women. And it's only women directors. They only deal with women distributors. I'm for real. And it's just a microcosm of society without the PC.
So the question goes to the next thing is with that, is that, you know, why are all these white guys watching this, you know, these black men beat, you know, have sex with white women and choke them and stuff, and they get off to it? Is this a racism thing, like you said, that it's like, I don't know. It kind of sounds a little strange to me, but if you know the answer.
Well, and I don't want to really go here. Gosh, you want the truth?
Yeah, man, why not? We'll put the disclaimer, like I said, before this stuff goes on.
Those are primarily rape fantasies.
Yeah.
That's what they really are, because interracial.
But it's mostly men, right? It's correct. It's not women, or is it women too? That watch this, like, you know, the interracial stuff. Is it white, just white men, or is it white women also?
Well, we learned in the industry, from the distributors and everything, the porn buyers over the past 20 years have been about 50-50.
Oh, wow.
And it was a time where it was majority men, but when it became more mainstream, it's almost like 50-50 now. It's still a little bit more with the men, maybe 55, 45, something like that.
Hmm.
But sex toys are about 80 or 90% women buyers. Men buy porn, women buy sex toys. So we that's like when you go get a, when you go to a sex shop, you might see one or two male masturbating machines, and you'll see a wall of dildos and a wall of masturbators for women. The sex shops are really designed for women. The porn in the middle is designed for the men.
Yeah.
But women are watching more porn now, much more.
Well, I asked that because that was in the documentary too, is that a lot of, they're saying like a lot of white men are like watching, excuse me, that kind of porn particularly. And, you know, the cuckold and shit is mostly with the white man and stuff like that. So I feel like what you said, it all goes back into that racism dynamic.
Yeah, unfortunately, it goes everywhere. I mean, interracial sex was introduced in this country in a racist fashion.
Yeah.
If it's black women and white men, it's some type of slavery thing. If it's black men and white women, it's some kind of birth of a nation, chaser down, savagery type thing. So either or is primal. And when you speak to something primal, and you see rape combines sex and violence, and those are two triggers for men. We get off on sex, we get off on violence. All of our games are violent. Even chess, it's about conquering. checkers about conquering, football about conquering, basketball about conquering. Everything we do is to destroy our opponent. So you, when you combine sex and violence, even if the man is turned off, like that's disgusting, it triggers something that's innate in testosterone.
It's like dopamine, then you figure.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not an accident that interracial videos sell more, almost twice as much as all black or all white. That's not an accident. And the directors and the porn, because when you go to the porn companies, they're in a boardroom discussing what you and I are discussing now. And it's just normal, like, oh, we have this demographic and testosterone levels are here and they got the graphs. And yeah, so the next three movies, we're gonna need a little bit more choking, some chains and a couple of racial slurs. Got it? And I'm like, whatever, man, write the check. I mean, because they see the sales. They said, obviously this is what the people want. So yeah, chase this white lady into the village, make her husband watch, and he's an old white man telling you to do this. And again, and tie her up and beat her and stuff. Okay, and the black girl, start grabbing her by her hair. You got me? I'm like, whatever, just write the script, because they see how the sales shoot up with certain things. And they also can see like, oh, sales are down on this one. Next videos, we're gonna have a lot of hand-holding, a lot of lovemaking, and I want it done under a willow tree. Like, okay, but it's all economically motivated.
It depends
on what the people are buying.
Yeah, you put the porn industry right now in such a way that, you know, people don't even think about it. And I mean, it's just because people don't even know. So I appreciate that, because, you know, for somebody that's watched porn, you know, quite a few times before, I'm not going to lie to you. At least I know what's going on. And it's like, almost like you said, it goes back to like, kind of like pimp game, and instead of like the mind manipulation tactics. And I want to end on this and with the other two books, because I don't want to keep you on here too long.
That doesn't bother me. I like the yap, so.
Well, do you feel like that's like pimp game as far as that goes with the, you know, we talk about when the mind manipulation, I know this, you talked about this on the last podcast with the lobster and there's other mind manipulation tactics. Do you feel like when you was talking about the porn industry executives, that's kind of like the mind manipulation? What can we do to keep these people watching and buying and stuff like that?
Everything is pimp game.
Yeah.
Everything. When you look at the characteristics of pimps, hoes, macs, hustlers, you'll find those same people on your job. They just go by different names. You don't think about the labels. Think about the characteristics. You have a bishop at your job. You have a knight at your job. You know, you have a pawn at your job. You have a king and queen at your job. And once you identify the pieces and where the board is and how they move, then you can move them correctly. I tell people, do you know the most powerful piece in chess? And one guy might say, the king is. I say, no, he's a target. And they'll say, well, the queen is. I said, no, she does all the work. And he said, what's the most powerful piece on the chessboard? I said, the hand. The hand is. The book teaches you to be the hand. You're not on the board. You're the hand. I learned that from a statement from Don King. When Mike Tyson was fighting Michael Spinks, and I remember him in a quick interview, and he was just walking past. That's how fast the interview was. And he said, who do you think's gonna win tonight's fight? And he smiled and said, I am. And it all clicked in my head then. Be the hand. Not the queen, not the king, not the pawn. You be the hand.
Yeah, because he's gonna be making the money, so that's not makes
he's
sense.
He's gonna be making all the moves. He moves the pieces, and you'll be able to manipulate those pieces on your job accordingly. That's why the guy sometimes who does the less work moves up the fastest. Well, I'm doing everything. Yeah, you're a knight, you're castling. He's the hand. He's running game on the bishop. He's working over here with the pawn. He's whispering in the queen's ear, can convince that one that, you know, the boss needs to know how smart you are. So you should do my work too. He's gotten close to the king and he hasn't done anything because he's the hand.
I want to talk about the last two books, though, the other two books, rather. So, well, there's three books that we haven't really talked about with the, well, we kind of talked about the mind control, I guess, with the pimp game, but we'll talk about this. So I do want to talk about with you, Mickey, So since we kind of talked about that with the other two books, Pimpin' Ain't Easy, But Somebody's Gotta Do It, and, you know, Leaving, what was the, what, the white woman one?
Well, I'm Leaving You for a White Woman.
Yeah, and I'm Leaving You for a White Woman. So are those two books, are they true stories, or is that something you just made up through life in general?
Well, all my stories are true, but I'm Leaving You for a White Woman is not my story. That's another guy's story I developed a book from, who told me his whole life story in about 10 minutes in the steam room. I said, I'm going to write a book about that. He said, feel free. He told me his whole life story about 5 or 10 minutes, and I got the gist of it, you know, and I understood him. And I got some more feedback from barbershops, because like I said in the pitch, men say certain things about women when no women are around. Then when women walk in the door, all of a sudden everybody's changed their story, you know. So it's what a lot of Black men think regarding white women and Black women when there's nobody else around but us. And we're totally honest at the gym. And I get so much stuff from the steam room. There's something about the heat that brings out the honesty in people. And at the time I was going to the Y, so it's segregated. There's no women in there. They have their side, we have our side. 24 hours, well, there's integrated. They have men and women, so you're not gonna get the truth. You know, women walk in and they're gonna change their tune and soften their talk, but when you were at the one where all men, you got the, I'm mad as hell and I'm not gonna take it anymore. And you got the real honesty out of them, because there's no women around to listen to it. But Pimpin' Ain't Easy, But Somebody's Gotta Do It, well, that has about 25 pictures in that book. And those are actual stories. In my book, Alone for the Ride, I actually changed names and things like that. And Pimpin' Ain't Easy, I didn't give a damn. I put pictures in there and real names. I just didn't care.
Mickey, did you have a fear for your life or any of your safety? Because, you know, be doing these interviews, talking about this, and people worrying about you giving out secrets or names or anything like that?
Well, it's a good line. You ever see Usual Suspects?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, how do you sneak up on and shoot Mickey Royal in the back? What if you miss? No, not at all. I was usually the guy that was called. If you look at my sheet, when I say enforcer for those groups, I was that. I mean, what if you really miss? I was the guy that was called. So no. And unfortunately, most of the people I incriminate in my book is me. But so I have to be careful about dates, times, statutes of limitations. So I switch a few things around. But no, I've never cared about those type of things. I've been on that list a couple of times. Got a few holes in my body, so to speak. I survived them. When people say, God, man, what happened to you? I say, yeah, you should see the other guy, though. I'm still here. So that's not something I actually worry about, you know, because it's true. And it's in relationship to me. I don't know what you did before the party, but I know what I saw you do. Now, do I just point fingers and incriminate? No, because a lot of people, and I said this in another interview, like a year, I think it was Nat, well, it wasn't Nat, it was some other interview. I think it was Al Pfaff's interview. I said, I have to respect the fact that these people have gone on with their lives. Some of the women, I can't call out their names because I know one right now, she lives in Pacific Palisades in an $11 million house. She's a housewife. She married an investment banker. He doesn't know about her past, and he's not gonna learn about it from me. I'm not gonna mess that up because I don't have an $11 million house to match that. So I'm not gonna mess up the new life that she's built. We communicate once or twice a year, but it's, shh, don't tell him, he doesn't know. I would never. So in my stories where she comes in, I replace her with someone else. I said, I would never do that. You have a great life now, and I'm so happy and proud of you. And I remember one time when she told me how she got married, and she has two children with him now, and he's just so happy. He's not the most handsome man in the world, and he landed this bombshell. And I called her one time, and you remember Officer and a Gentleman?
Yeah.
You ever see that?
Yeah.
When she sent me some wedding pictures, I said, way to go, Paula. Way to go. Back then, I just hung up the phone. I'm not going to ruin that for her. I wouldn't dare. If I saw her in public, I walked past her like I didn't even know her. So I protect anonymity as much as I can, but if Pimpin' Ain't Easy, But Somebody's Got to Do It, no, I got pictures. But I switch certain things around because I don't want anybody getting in trouble, but I never fear it at all, personally.
Right.
You can't call me a liar.
So we'll end with this, Mickey. For, you know, first of all, what's up next for you? Are you going to be writing any other books, or what are you going to be doing?
Yeah, I'm always write books because it brings me pleasure. If I won the lottery, I'd still write. I have to. I have too much information. I have too many stories. I got to get this out. It's just that if I won $100 million, I wouldn't care if the book sold or not. I'd probably give them away for free, but I got to get it out. I love doing this. It brings, I learned a word last year called chakra. It brings my pleasure to my chakra and my inner being. I'm really on that kick now. And my energy, that's another word that my fiance has taught me. Energy and chakra and all those other eclectic words I never learned before in my life. So I got to get it out. It's like writing to me is like the gym to your friend. If you want, I got to do it. So, but no more pimp games. I'm not sure if I'm going to do another pimp game. I think it's one more left in me because those are instructional manuals. I love telling the stories more. You know, even though I usually sell more pimp games, but the stories, to get any stories out is really therapeutic for me. And they're funny, they're dangerous, they're life. You know, they're life. And I really get more enjoyment from my stories. So more of the stories, the real stories that happen, pictures gonna be in them and everything. So what I'm working on now is a story and finishing up another pimp game, because sometimes I write them two at a time. Because I can't write two stories at a time because they'll blend in. But I can write a story and an instructional guide at the same time. You know, one is first person singular, one is like a descriptive narrative, so they don't clash. So, but there's gonna always be books coming out from me, and maybe I wouldn't call it a podcast, but a lot of storytelling on the internet. I just got so many. I got 30 years of stories, and I did this every day, every night. I interacted with everyone. I know everybody in Hollywood, every celebrity, every Big Willie, every sports figure. I know all of their sexual secrets because my women were their dance partners and we discussed steps as they came home. So I know what everybody does. I see them on TV. I say, I know his fetish. I know hers. I know his. That guy's lying. You know, I've been married 32 years. Yeah, but you didn't dance with about eight of mine because I dropped them off at your house. I know this. So, and I'm not going to incriminate none of those people or expose, because I have books that I want to turn into movies one day. So I'm not going to burn any bridges I plan on running back across. But if I see them in person, I can whisper in their ear and go, yeah, I remember you like ice cream over your genitals. I know that. I whisper it to them, but I would never expose anybody, no.
As we end the interview here, Mickey Royal here on Fire Breathing Rob, and I know we went really long, we'll probably cut half of this out, but I do want to get a lot of this information out to the young viewers that are going to be hearing this on the radio and also listening on the YouTube. So we'll end with this. Can you end with a Hollywood story that you can tell the viewers about the craziness as far as the parties and the people you've met throughout in Hollywood, even if you can't say names?
Oh no, I can't say names because I want to work with some of these people. But I mean, what do you mean? If I can't say names, I mean, what do you want to know?
Well, I guess just talk about like maybe a party or some, what's went on there. Are we talking about like, you know, I know you said about the ice cream on the genitals. I don't know if that was true or not, but
everything I say is true.
Oh, geez. But
fact is so much stranger than fiction. Yeah. It really is. That's why a lot of times I just tell the truth, because I said, you're not going to believe me anyway. I don't believe it, but I saw it, you know. But I can tell you there's one party I know of, and it's off Wilshire in Los Angeles, and that's the borderline to Hollywood. You're going down Crenshaw. I used to make a left on Wilshire. I go down a few blocks. I make a right on Rossmore. Rossmore turns into Vine, and when it does, it's a whole nother world. But it's one on Wilshire right before Rossmore. It's in a residence. It's a married couple. They're both actor, you know, actor and actress. They have a weekly swing party, and there's nothing but actors and actresses there. And it's a lot of what I call champagne and cocaine lifestyle. And it has been going on that I know of for at least the last 12 years, every week. And that's just one. It's hard for me to get into these stories without telling names. So in the books, I get time to think and change names and change it, because I'm not gonna piss off anyone and then ask them, hey, would you like to buy my script? They're like, you? No, get out of here. No, I want to be your friend. But I can whisper in those people's ears. You know, maybe if you and I were like at the steam room and I knew I wasn't being recorded, I'd be like, you know, so-and-so such and such? Yeah, he likes girls to kick him in the genitals. Or, you know, so-and-so? Yeah, she likes to be urinated on. And you know, I know all of those, because a lot of times when they used to hire my girls, my ladies were kind of afraid and intimidated because they were who they were. So I had to sit in the corner of the room. A lot of times I didn't leave out the room. I was sitting maybe 10 feet away when these things took place, because they were kind of intimidated. Like, that's so-and-so. Like, yeah, but he's not gonna hurt you. I have a pistol under my arm. He's not gonna hurt you. So you're talking about 30 years of stories like this. A lot of sports figures. Like I said, I can go down the roster of the Lakers for 18 years. I'm just not going to say anything, but I would tell you in private, because they make for interesting water cooler talk. But if someone asked me in public, I would deny it, because I want to be your friend. I have scripts to sell.
I understand.
Yeah.
That's fair. So we'll end with that. Mickey Royal, again, thanks so much for coming on. We definitely have to have you on again. I mean, this was really fun, and hopefully people will listen to this and really gain a lot of knowledge, not only about his books, and definitely buy the books on Amazon. I've already bought one. I'm going to work on buying the other three once I get done with the first one. But no, I'm really looking forward to reading your other books, and also obviously finishing Pimp Game within the next day or two. So Mickey, thanks so much for coming on. Again, MickeyRoyal.com too.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.